Hey, welcome to another episode of The Breakdown. It's Nick and I today.
Back again. Looking forward to it.
We're still in our series, The Central Jesus. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the importance of foundation, the importance of love and of hope. And this week was compassion.
Yeah.
Which was perfect because you perfectly timed it with Compassion Weekend.
It's almost like we do that stuff on purpose.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Planning is good.
Uh-huh.
So we had compassion on campus.
We did.
They're an awesome organization. If you've never heard of them, Google them real quick. They help kids all over the world. You can adopt a child from a different country and support them. Mm-hmm. And we had a guy named Jonathan who came and shared his testimony from the Dominican Republic, and it was fantastic.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Like, even I didn't know what we were in for with Jonathan. I had never met him, and they really didn't give me much details of what he'd be doing. They said he was going to come and share his story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew that he was a kid that had grown up in the Compassion program, but I didn't really know much about him beyond that. I didn't really know anything about him other than that. So it was really kind of cool for me, too, because I was like, holy smokes, man.
Yeah, what a testimony.
What a testimony. What a story. What a, you know, what a great impact compassion had on him. Most importantly, Jesus had on him because of that ministry of compassion. And then that he's been able to have in his family. You know, said he came from a family involved in witchcraft and all that. So it's pretty amazing.
It was. I loved it. I got to talk to him a little bit before, mm-hmm. in between first and second service. And he was reading a book about how the Old Testament and New Testament are so interconnected.
Mm.
And he and I just kind of chit-chatted about it.
He's just enjoying a little light reading between
services. Right? Yeah, it was cool. But we'll start off and kind of talk about the question that I have for today, and it could be lighthearted, it could be serious, but what's a time somebody's shown you compassion or you wish they would have shown you compassion?
Okay, I probably have a lot of stories of this, but I'm going to tell one that's slightly inappropriate, but not inappropriate enough to get me fired.
Okay,
or
good. But no, if you have kids around now.
Yeah, no, it's really not bad at all. You know, look, I had my dog one time at my church. You know, sometimes we bring our dogs to the church from time to time.
Your dog to church.
You know, we've had them around. But in my old church, you know, there really weren't that many people on staff and there really weren't that many people around. And so when we got a new dog, there were a couple of days I brought him. And he was a rescue now. He wasn't a puppy. Yeah. And so he was there in the church with me and one of our elders came by. And so the elder came by and we were talking. Everything was good. And I mean, he didn't care that I had the dog there. We were talking and chit-chatting. Everything's fine. Well, the dog was kind of ran down the hallway, and I didn't think anything of it. And then the elder and I were talking, and we walked upstairs because we were doing something in the worship center. And so you had to go up the stairs and go up. And, you know, I see the dog is there, and he's like running, kind of comes back and runs along with us, and it's totally fine, no issue. Well, we get in there, and Larry was his name, and Larry gets up to the front, and he's doing what he's doing, and he said, "Hey, Nick, can you come here for just a minute?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, okay." And I walk up there. And unfortunately, my dog had had, let's say, an accident in the floor of the sanctuary,
oh,
right, with my elder there. And I could just, I was thinking to myself, oh no, oh man, he's going to let me have it, right? And he was so kind and compassionate in that moment to me. And I was mortified, mortified, right? So that's my story of compassion. He was great about it. Obviously, I took care of it and, you know, nobody was worse for the wear. But boy, that was an awkward situation.
I bet. There was a time where I wished someone had shown me compassion.
Okay.
So I'm in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working 40 hours at Subway. I was looking for a little extra cash on the side. So my friend...
I didn't know you were a Subway slanger.
I was, man.
Dang,
for
man.
Six, 7 years.
A sandwich artist. I didn't know we had a sandwich artist on staff.
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry, go ahead.
So my friend knew that I was interested in coaching. I loved basketball. So she was coaching at this private school, high school girls. Well, they wanted to create a middle school team for boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, I know a guy. He can come start the program. So I started the program. In our first year, we were in this Christian league.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was terrible.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody.
Right.
Like, it was close games for us. We had, like, one kid that could actually play. The second year, the school decided, because their high school team was good, that they were going to go into the public schools.
Uh-huh.
I was okay with that. We could still play private schools, but we had to have X amount of games against public school teams.
Sure.
So I circled this one game against a team that I knew they were going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of prepped our kids to know that we're going to go and give it our best.
Mm-hmm.
So we get – this is an away game. We get there, and this team is – there's these guys warming up. And one of my players said, man, their high school team looks really good. And I looked over to him, and I was like, buddy, that's the team we're playing.
Oh, man.
They were, like, legit. And so I could see the fear on the kids' faces.
That's never good.
Took them in the corner, prayed with them. I was like, I believe in God, but guys, there ain't nothing we can do.
Right. It would have taken a miracle, a true miracle.
They beat us 77-2.
Oh, no.
They full court pressed us all game.
That's so low, man. That's so low.
I wanted to hide under a rock for our kids.
I would be. You handled it better than I did because I would be so angry.
I asked the ref because the coach obviously wanted this to happen.
Yeah.
I asked the ref, I said, can we do running clock second half?
Yeah.
And he let us.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, I wish this team would have shown us compassion. And it was a teaching point for our kids.
Sure.
But, oh, man.
To win the game. I'm all about, you know, you go and get the win. I'm cool with that. But, man, you gotta do that stuff the right way. That's why Abby doesn't let me coach anything, because I would have lost my mind.
Yeah.
I would have been out of pocket on that one.
I just felt so bad for our kids, too.
Right.
And
that's why I would have been mad. Like, don't disrespect the game. Don't disrespect these kids. Like, you can't full court press an entire game.
And it was
some points.
I knew what we were getting into
when
that game got scheduled because they're a team that was notorious for that.
Yeah.
But you're totally.
I mean,
right.
Go ahead and whoop us, right? You know, I played college basketball in a Bible college. I know what it is to take a beating, right? I could take a beating. I'll take a beating like a man.
Have compassion.
Yeah, but not, you know, not the kids. And at some point, you always call off the dogs.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, you know, you whoop a team, you know, you've got them. I'm cool with that. Like, yeah, you can trounce us, but you can't, man. Oh, it makes me mad just hearing about
it. Got amped up.
That's why I can't coach, man. It was so funny. I was coaching Upward here at Galilee when we had Upward, and I had to do a funeral that day. And so I had my suit on from the funeral.
Uh-huh.
And so I was down there coaching because the game was right after the funeral. So I came down and coached our team. And so I've got the suit on, you know, like I'm an old school coach, and I'm like yelling. And JP, who goes to our church, he was joking on me so hard, man. He was like, yeah, you had the full picture that day of the yelling coach on the sideline in the suit. I was like, yep, that was me. So Abby says no more of that.
No more of that. So in the sermon, you get into compassion, and the main text is Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37, and this is the story of the Good Samaritan.
That's right.
And so I kind of want to open up, what was your sermon at the heart of it? What was it about?
Yeah, you know, obviously about compassion, but what do we do maybe most specifically with being compassionate with people we don't want to be compassionate towards, or people that we don't have a natural bent towards compassion? Look, it's like Jesus said, you know, it's basically, it's easy to love people that love you. It's not hard to be kind and loving to people that love you. It's another thing to love your enemy. It's another thing to love your opponent, right? That's really a piece of what's at the heart of this story of the Good Samaritan, because as you know, Jews and Samaritans were at each other's throats. And the Jewish people, the teacher of the law who puts the question to Jesus, basically, of like, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? And he tells him, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. He's like, you've answered correctly. And then, you know, basically comes down from there to, okay, who's my neighbor then, Jesus?
That's the question.
And he really believes that he's gotten one over or outsmarted Jesus on this. Or maybe the better way to say it is he thinks he's painted him into a corner.
Yeah, because you mentioned in your sermon the cultural, how they would have seen this of, you know, the Jew's neighbor was another Jew.
Yeah.
They weren't going to talk to somebody who wasn't Jewish.
Right.
They looked down on those people. And so, it's easy to love a fellow Jew.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And really, Jesus gets into this story of somebody who they despise.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, if you've never heard the story, you can find it in Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 30. But there's really three characters that pass by this guy who's been beaten and is left on the road for dead. Mm-hmm. Two of those characters, the Jewish person would have really resonated with.
Right.
So you have a priest and you have a Levite.
Right.
And both of those people, the Jew has interacted with before.
Yeah.
And both of those people ignore the person on the side of the road. They go out of their way to pass by them. Mm-hmm. And it is a Samaritan, somebody who is not a friend of Jews, who stops and takes care of this man.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't just take care of them. He goes above and beyond,
for sure.
Pays for the guy's hotel. He takes care of his medical expenses.
Treats his wounds. On the roadside, and then does all that other stuff.
And then Jesus kind of reflects the question back at the teacher and says, all right, which one of these do you think was the neighbor?
Right.
And there is a wrong answer in this situation.
Right.
And he has to answer, well, it's the guy who had mercy on him.
Right.
And it's interesting. He doesn't even say, like, the Samaritan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard for him to own that.
Yeah.
Hard for him to own it, and at the same time, he knows he can really only answer one way. You know, we backtrack a little bit, and we think about what Jesus says to him when he says, how do you read it?
Yeah.
Right? How do you understand this commandment? Or these commandments. And I find that really interesting because the teacher of the law, of course, knew what the text said. Mm. He could read the text quite well. He had studied the text. He taught other people the text.
Yeah.
But Jesus's point was about his interpretation of it. You know, how do you read it is, what do you believe this says?
Yeah.
Right? And so for what he believed it said, he really believed, okay, well, this is, you know, my neighbor is fellow Jews.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing the right thing. I'm the one that's in the right. I'm the one that other people look to. And I really, that's where it comes even more into full picture. Mm. When you see Jesus painting this picture of the priest and the Levite, who clearly have not read and understood well what the actual teaching is showing them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They know what it says, but they aren't actually living it because they go out of their way to not show compassion. They literally walk around the person.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really, that's what this teacher of the law is doing. Mm. And so in so many ways, he is literally them, right?
Yeah,
he is them in that picture and in the way he's understanding and interpreting what it is, you know, the answer to the question of how do you read this.
Yeah. And what Jesus is saying is everyone's your neighbor.
Yeah, that's right.
And so in your sermon, you kind of gave us three natural lessons that follow is, mm-hmm. Let me see. No, I want to backtrack.
Yeah.
I want to backtrack because I think you made an important point in this idea where we can be compassion weary, I think is the phrase that you use,
mm-hmm.
where we see all the bad that is happening in this world. I mean, you think about just the news that happened yesterday,
mm-hmm.
school shooting in Nashville, that our hearts hurt, and we get to this place where we're either so bombarded by the evil in this world that we do nothing,
mm-hmm.
or we get to a place where there are so many people that need help that we would just rather do nothing because we're paralyzed. We think that we cannot financially or by any means help them. What would you say to that as far as what is our role as the Christian in a day-to-day context of how do I show compassion to the people that are around me?
Sure. Yeah, compassion fatigue is an issue for everybody. And I think especially in this day and age where we have such a proliferation of information, mm-hmm. right? We know now, we live in a day and age where we know all of the terrible things that are happening around the world almost as soon as they happen.
Yeah.
And they happen in droves, mm-hmm. right? And you imagine a day and age, you know, 70, 80 years ago, you didn't have that level of information. So there were terrible things happening in the world, but you didn't know about most of them, right?
Sure.
You could read the paper and you'd find out some things. And of course, only a portion of people read the paper.
Yeah.
They didn't have access. If you go back far enough, they didn't have access to the news, you know, regularly. They didn't have access to, you know, obviously the internet and all
these
other things.
They didn't have Facebook?
Yeah, there was no Facebook, believe it or not. No the Google.
Yeah.
You know, and you just think about now we have all of that on us and you just think, man, it becomes easy to just drown it out like noise and to lack compassion, to get to a place where we just feel like we can't do it because there's too much to do. And that's where we really directed people in this message about do for one what you wish you could do for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, you just take a perspective that says, I'm going to do for one what I wish I could do for everyone. So when God gives me an opportunity to serve somebody, bless somebody, I'm going to be okay with doing what I believe the Lord is leading me to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to trust the Lord with the rest of it.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned something that I think is critical and practical, is that the situations that God puts in front of you.
Yeah.
And so, for example, in the text, this guy who had been beaten was literally in the path of these people.
Yeah.
Like, they had to go out of their way to pass by them. And so I think about the opportunities that we have on a daily basis where they're right in front of us.
Yes.
And we have that choice to whether stop what we're doing to help or continue on the path and go right around them. And we do. We mess up. We fail.
We do. Everybody does.
Yeah.
You know, I gave that illustration towards the end of the message about the kids at Princeton back in the 70s where they did this, you know, they were basically doing a social experiment even back then, where they were supposed to, they were told they needed to go across campus, these students, these guys that were studying to be pastors, preachers. And the assignment was, you need to go across campus to this particular building and you're going to deliver a sermon on the Good Samaritan. Well, along the way, they put a person who was literally like falling down, you know, coughing and stumbling in front of them.
Yeah.
And they said, I think I'm trying to remember what the statistic was now, something like 70%, or maybe it was a higher percentage, literally went around the person to get there, to get to where they needed to go, were late to go deliver the sermon on the Good Samaritan. The funniest part of it is that one person literally stepped over top of the person that had fallen down. Oh, now, you know, whether they fell on a sidewalk or whatever, I don't know. That sounds like it's probably the case. Walked over them to rush off and get there to deliver their sermon.
About helping people.
I mean, like, at some point you're like, wait a minute, something's going on. You just be smart enough to know, like, okay, this can't be, right? Yeah.
But how often do, when we're preparing for either a lesson or a sermon, during that week, God gives us something to be like, all right, let me check your heart.
All the time.
Like, let me see if you are obedient to my word that you have been studying. Like, do you find it so important to teach my word and not obey it? And that's kind of what Jesus is getting at with this guy, is that you have this head knowledge about what the law is, but are you putting it into action?
Yeah. And I love it when Jesus teaches me those lessons, even when they are not fun at the time, where I'm like, oh man, I've really got to apply either what I'm about to deliver this Sunday or what I just did. Yeah. Like, Jesus will frequently give me an opportunity before and after to be like, okay, did you mean what you said or not? And sometimes I'm, you know, drugged there kicking and screaming to do whatever the thing was that I know I'm talking about or, you know, just talked about. So we are all guilty of, again, compassion fatigue. We are all guilty of, from time to time, being a hypocrite, right? You know, everybody's guilty of that. I'm not above it. And so I would just say that, you know, you have to own that in truth and say, Lord, continue to do your work on me and make me more receptive, make me more open, God, to what it is you want done.
Yeah.
Give me the energy, the strength, the passion to do it, and don't let me make excuses for myself. Because so much of this, right? I mean, so much of what I talked about is about excuse making.
Yeah, and that's what you get at with your three lessons that you believe flow out of this text, is that no matter who you are, you can't get out of loving others.
That's it.
Everyone is called to love.
Yep.
We just had a whole sermon on love.
Right.
And so in compassion, that's part of it. We have to love, and we don't get to choose who we love.
Yes.
And then you said religious and ethnic differences aren't a reason to not love somebody.
Yeah, man. I mean, you just think about, you know, we could make a whole list of whether it's a Muslim person or whether it's a person who is, you know, homosexual, or whether it's a person who's of a different, you know, political party than us. I think about all the modern Samaritans that we have in our lives. because, you know, none of us are mad at Samaritans. None of us would have any problem talking to somebody.
Who's a Samaritan?
Yeah, like? We wouldn't even know. But, you know, there's, so when you try to apply a text like this, it's so critical that you ask yourself the question, who are the Samaritans to me?
Yeah.
Today, right now, who are the people I'm feeling that way about?
Yeah.
And guess what? God has made it really clear to me that I don't get to take a stance towards them that's unloving and uncompassionate.
Mm.
I just don't.
And it's so easy to find those people that we disagree with, whether that be online, most of it's online,
yep,
and bash their views and yep. not show compassion. Like, it is very encouraging, because it's rare when I see a healthy conversation happening on social media.
Yeah.
And so I know that's an easy fix for the Christian, is that, hey, show compassion.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what they believe. They are image bearers of God,
mm-hmm.
no matter who they are, no matter what their differences are with you. Like, keep that in mind.
Yep.
And so then the last one is, our enemy is our friend. Or at least we hope that if we are the one in the ditch, that somebody would come and help us.
That's it.
I think
do
that
unto others as you'd have them do unto you, you know?
Yeah.
It's simple, but not always something we keep in mind, that idea of grace that we want given to us, that we are also willing to give it away to somebody else.
Yeah. And I believe that to remind ourselves of the compassion we should have for others is to remind ourselves of the gospel that's been given to us, like this free gift of grace, where we were the ones dead in the ditch and could not, no matter what we did, get ourselves to get out of that situation.
That's
yet
right.
Jesus freely gave his life to help us out, to bring us up, to give us new life. And that's really what, at the heart of it, should push us towards compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Not because we want to be good people, but because of what Jesus has done for us. It's all about Jesus, yeah. always.
He's been good to us, that's to say the least. And so the least we can do is be good back.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think a final word, mm-hmm. you know, too, would be, really encourage you, if you've not already been a part of Compassion, the organization. One of the great things you can do, just go to their website. We can probably put a link in the show notes that sends you to them. Sponsor a kid. I'm waiting to hear the final numbers of how many kids we got sponsored over this past weekend, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
But I think let's add to that number. If you're not
Absolutely.
Yet sponsoring a kid, it's easy to do. It's really not much money. And Jonathan's story really showed us it can have a huge impact, not just in the life of the kid you sponsor, but their entire family.
Mm. And he even said that now he's in charge of, what, 65,000 kids?
Yeah, it's insane.
And like 235 churches? Like
right.
that.
Amazing.
Just because
Compassion is a legit organization. You know, you always wonder with those groups of like, oh, I'm going to send my money off, and I wonder if it actually goes to a kid, and, you know, so on and so forth. And if you do like Charity Navigator, which is one of the things Abby and I talk about a lot with charities that we promote, because I believe that the expectation should be they be excellent stewards of the money that's given. If you do Charity Navigator for them, you'll see that they have a very good grade.
Yeah.
Every one of those big organizations has overhead. They all do. So, yes, some money goes towards paying people that are doing a lot of jobs behind the scenes.
For sure.
But they're making a worldwide significant impact, and they have a very good grade on Charity Navigator. So
Charity Navigator.
Yep,
to check
it's
it
a
out.
Good one.
Never
yeah, basically, anytime you give to any charity, I recommend you go to Charity Navigator and check them out.
Yeah.
Don't make sure you're not giving your money to somebody where it's like 85% of your gift goes towards administrative costs and 15% goes towards the person that you're trying to give the money to.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the ones you want to avoid.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you have going on that you're excited about, man?
Man, I'm going on vacation.
You are.
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm putting you to work this weekend.
Hey, I like it.
No, we're going to be blessed by hearing Brennan wrap up this week our series here on Essential Jesus, and all about obedience.
All about right? it.
So excited to watch that. I'm sure we'll be watching online, either live that morning or catching it some point in the day, because we may end up worshiping at a physical church that morning while we're down there at the beach. But yeah, we'll be gone for a couple of days, enjoying some spring break, and then we'll be back, and man, I'm pumped for Easter. Can't wait to see the egg drop and all the kids here and all the families on our campus. It's a great outreach, and then flow right into an amazing day. There is a King. That's our theme for Easter, and got a message I can't wait to deliver about King Jesus, and that's me, man. How about you?
Yeah. I'm excited to preach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The preparation that goes into preaching is fun for me. Mm-hmm. I really like studying and getting into it. And as Christy reminded me, she's like, you don't have to say everything.
Yes.
Just get to the point. And it's difficult because I love the nitty-gritty details.
Christy's a good one to bounce it off of because she grew up a daughter of not a daughter of a preacher, but a granddaughter of a preacher. And then Shane has been in ministry in some of his years in life. So, and she's read all my stuff through the years. So she's a really good one to bounce it off of and say, hey, is all this working?
So I think it's going to flow well. I'm excited to talk about obedience. I think it's a perfect wrap up to say, all right, we talked about hope, love, and compassion. What you going to do about it?
That's it.
Will you obey?
Rubber's got to meet the road, brother.
Yeah. So that's what I'm excited about. Of course, Easter, but we'll get there. I got to get through Sunday first. So.
Let's do it, man. I'll be praying for you. We know it's going to be awesome. God's going to bless it.
Yeah. But we thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.